Welcome to another quick and condensed American History for the Modern Patriot. This is Dr. Susan Rempel. Please support my podcast by purchasing one of the games or teaching tools on my website, bingoforpatriots.com, or one of more than 100 different printable bingo games on my other website, uncommoncourtesy.com. Thank you so much for supporting my work. Was there a consequence for Benedict Arnold's egregious behavior in Philadelphia? How did the great chain that we learned about in the previous episode factor in Arnold's plot to surrender West Point to the British? What were the dramatic events that took place on that day in September of 1780? Benedict Arnold's betrayal of his country is well known. What is more interesting, perhaps, is the time immediately preceding what he anticipated to be the surrender of West Point to the British, as well as what happened as the plan began to unravel. I concluded the previous podcast by referencing Benedict Arnold's plundering of confiscated goods from those living in Philadelphia, transporting the goods using continental wagons, and smuggling the goods to New York to be sold on the black market. Arnold's lavish lifestyle and questionable practices eventually brought him under the scrutiny of the Supreme Executive Council of Philadelphia. His poor treatment of those who transported the confiscated goods to the harbor and others who altered records to protect him led to their cooperation in the council's investigation. After the investigation by the council in Philadelphia, the Congress took up the matter under court-martial proceedings. The matter dragged on for almost a year. In the end, Arnold was convicted of several counts originally identified by the council in Philadelphia. Congress also demanded he repay funds given to him for which he had no records, and that only increased Arnold's ever-mounting mountain of debt. What were the consequences for Arnold's bad behavior? Jail, return of the profits from the sale of the goods which rightly belonged in the continental coffers? No. He was sentenced, to use the term lightly, to receive a reprimand from George Washington. While the resulting reprimand was but a slap on the wrist, it was no doubt a tremendous blow to a narcissist such as Arnold. Whether that was the tipping point in his decision to betray his country, I can only speculate. However, it would seem to be a heavily contributing factor. Add to that the financial pressure resulting from his marriage to Peggy Shippen, Arnold may have been more than ready to jump ship, as they say, and Peggy, who was most likely a loyalist at heart, was only too willing to help him do so. Arnold has resigned his commission in Philadelphia shortly before his marriage to Peggy, ostensibly to focus solely on forcing the matter to trial in order to clear his name. However, shortly after his marriage, Arnold contacted Joseph Stansbury. Stansbury, who was born in England, was a merchant who lived in Philadelphia. During the British occupation, he served as the commander of the watch. Despite his clearly loyalist leanings, he remained in Philadelphia after the British left the city. Although there is no written record as to why Arnold chose to contact Stansbury, it is possible that Peggy Shippen would have been well aware, because of her social connections, that he had transported letters from young ladies in Philadelphia to British soldiers who had left the city. She also knew that her former suitor, John André, had become the British Chief of Intelligence. Stansbury used the help of Reverend Jonathan O'Dell to make contact with John André. It was O'Dell who deciphered many of the letters that were exchanged between André and Arnold. In the spring of 1780, with the court-martial proceedings behind him, Arnold again sought a commission from Washington. Washington offered to place Arnold in the field, but Arnold declined, citing continued problems with a leg that had been injured many times in battle. Yet that was not the true reason for Arnold's resistance. Arnold was aware that British General Clinton had designs on overtaking the fortification at West Point. If they took control of that facility, as well as the Great Chain, the Continental cause would be severely hampered. Eventually, Washington promised Arnold command of West Point. On August 3rd, Arnold received orders to proceed to West Point, obtain intelligence on enemy troop movements, and specific instructions to strengthen the facility and carefully attend to daily matters such as the supply of provisions. Arnold, however, had other plans. He sought to weaken the facility, demoralize the troops, and bring it to the point where the British would have little resistance to take control of it. He wrote to Washington of the dismal condition of West Point on August 6th, and later described West Point to British General Henry Clinton as totally neglected. He also told Clinton of the weakness of the Great Chain across the Hudson, and speculated that a large, heavily loaded ship could break it. After Arnold slipped away to New York, it was found that more than 50% of the logs which supported the chain had rotted. The chain was returned to the Hudson with an insufficient number of logs because somehow the replacement logs had been burned. In retrospect, there were other signs that all was not well at West Point, and it is unclear why so much time passed before Washington or a committee which he appointed came to inspect the facility. But the story becomes much more interesting as we focus on the third week of September. West Point had been weakened. The terms of Arnold's defection and betrayal of his country and commanding officer had been agreed upon. The British were in position to move toward and overtake the facility. All was ready. There was only one more meeting, which was to take place between Arnold and André. André had visited Arnold before, but on September 21st, Arnold would give André detailed plans of West Point. On September 21st, the two concluded their meeting, and Arnold gave André documents which he could use to pass through the checkpoints near West Point. It was then that a series of very strange events happened. André was to return to his boat, the Vulture, with the assistance of Joshua Het Smith. Mr. Smith seems to have been a double or possibly even a triple agent. He had facilitated André's meeting with Arnold several times. This time, however, André had been unable to bring a field agent who had accompanied him in the past, because Smith had not included that person's accommodations in the arrangement. André was left to fend for himself. The morning that André was to return to his ship, the ship was shot at by colonists and forced to move down the Hudson. What a coincidence that colonists would choose to fire on a British vessel on that particular morning without any apparent provocation. Smith also told Arnold that there were no boats available to return André to the Vulture. How odd that the commander of the installation could not somehow summon a boat on his own. Why Arnold simply accepted Smith's statement that no boat was available is unclear. Otter Still, the neighbor whose boat Smith had used in the past for such meetings, stated that Smith told him he could leave the meeting if he was bored or tired. Naturally, the neighbor took his boat and went home. André was then forced to return to the Vulture on horseback. Smith then convinced André to change from his uniform, which was a factor in convicting André as a spy, and thus be hanged as the British had done to Nathan Hale. What was Smith's reasoning, and why did André agree to take off his uniform? Finally, Smith took André on trails which were near West Point itself, and clearly within the control of the Continental Army. Again, this was a piece of evidence at his trial that determined André was a spy rather than a captured British officer. Had he remained in his uniform and traveled through a different area, he might have been exchanged rather than hung. Smith left him at a fork on the road and suggested the route which André should take in order to return to the Vulture. Acting on instinct and an inherent distrust of Smith, André chose the other path. Who might have been waiting on the path that Smith directed André to take will be forever unknown. However, it is very curious indeed that Benjamin Talmadge, who was a spy himself and one of two men who were charged with guarding André after his capture, predicted to André that he would hang just as Talmadge's good friend, Nathan Hale, had done. Is it possible that Smith and Talmadge were working together? As André traveled along his chosen path, he encountered men named Paulding, Van Wart, and Williams. The men questioned André, who first identified himself as a British officer. Realizing that the men were not loyalist, he showed them the pass which Arnold had given him. Finding his explanation quite curious, they searched André and found the plans. They took André, who was only known as John Anderson, to Colonel John Jameson. Jameson sent the now prisoner Anderson to Benedict Arnold. In yet another amazing twist of fate, The same Benjamin Talmadge who was mentioned above was there when Jameson made the decision, which would have allowed both Arnold and André to escape. What you should know about Benjamin Talmadge is that he happened to be one of George Washington's chief intelligence officers. He convinced Jameson to recall the men who were in the process of delivering André to Arnold at his home and instead send André to a camp of Continental soldiers in Salem. Talmadge also convinced Jameson to send the documents which were found on André directly to Washington rather than giving the damning documents back to Arnold. Talmadge later contended that he could not convince Jameson not to send word to Arnold about André's capture. Jameson, who of course was the focus of Washington's displeasure, denied that either Talmadge or any other officer who he discussed the matter with told him not to send a courier with news of André's capture to Arnold. As it turned out, Arnold was breakfasting with Alexander Hamilton and James McHenry when he received Jameson's note, which included not only notice of John Anderson's capture, but mentioned the documents that he was carrying. McHenry and Hamilton described Arnold as agitated and said that he excused himself from the table without explanation. Arnold then went into a room where his wife was located, reappeared only to leave the house again without any explanation. They had no way of knowing that he was not going to West Point, but would hop on a boat that would take him to the Vulture. Funny how Arnold was able to find a boat to commandeer when Smith had been unable to see to it, isn't it? It was not long afterward that Washington and his entourage arrived at the home. Washington remained there to eat breakfast. During that time, they heard Peggy Arnold crying, in fact screaming. She was well aware of the precarious position she now found herself in. We will never know if she was truly hysterical or if she was beginning what could be described as an Academy Award-winning performance. Washington and his party left the residence to tour West Point without any knowledge of what had happened. It is curious that they left the seemingly delusional Peggy to go about their business. Of course, while they were gone, Peggy most likely took the opportunity to destroy whatever evidence may have existed in the house on her part in Arnold's deception. So how did George Washington learn of Arnold's plot? He had just inspected the West Point fortification, and perhaps even the Great Chain, with Henry Knox, Alexander Hamilton, and the Marquis de Lafayette. Washington and the others had been somewhat surprised not to find Arnold during their inspection. The party had returned to Arnold's headquarters and home, which was also the home of Beverly Robinson, who in yet another odd twist reportedly had loyalist leanings. The group had returned to the residence shortly after 4 p.m., and Washington had just laid down for a rest. Hamilton awakened Washington with the documents which had been found on André. Some of the documents included Arnold's handwriting, which was familiar to Washington because of their frequent correspondence. Hamilton later described Washington, upon realizing what had happened, as being on the verge of tears and exclaiming, "Arnold has betrayed us. Who can we trust now?" After composing himself, Washington immediately dispatched Alexander Hamilton on horseback to capture Arnold. Hamilton quickly sent an express back to Washington with a message that Arnold had already escaped. Meanwhile, Peggy Shipp and Arnold continued to sit in her bedroom. Alexander Hamilton wrote to his love interest, Elizabeth Schuyler, about her on September 25th. He described Peggy as having entirely lost her senses. Quote, "The general went up to see her, and she upbraided him with being in a plot to murder her child. One moment she raved, another she melted into tears, sometimes she pressed her infant to her bosom and lamented its fate, occasioned by the imprudence of its father, in a manner that would have pierced insensibility itself. All the sweetness of beauty, all the loveliness of innocence, all the tenderness of a wife, and all the fondness of a mother showed themselves in her appearance and conduct. As I said, it was an Academy Award-winning performance." Now that Arnold was safely aboard the Vulture, he forwarded a letter to Washington saying, quote, "I have no favor to ask for myself. I have too often experienced the ingratitude of my country to attempt it. But from the known humanity of your excellence, I am induced to ask your protection for Mrs. Arnold from every insult and injury that mistaken vengeance of my country may expose her to. It ought to fall only on me. She is as good and as innocent as an angel and incapable of doing wrong. Did you notice he once again used the phrase, in gratitude of my countrymen? As with his love letters, it would seem that there were certain themes upon which Benedict Arnold ruminated. So as the 25th of September drew to a close, we will end this edition. This is Dr. Susan Rempel encouraging you to remain motivated, informed, and engaged in the political process. Visit my website, www.bingoforpatriots.com, with more than 500 pages of documents, products, and information designed to motivate the modern patriot.